If I asked you how many subscriptions you have, would you be able to list all of them and how much you're paying? If you would have asked me this question before I started using Rocket Money, I would have said yes. But let me tell you, I would have been so wrong. I can't believe how many I had and all the money I was wasting. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/wondery. rocketmoney.com/wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great-tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great-tasting, high-quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today's show features an exclusive podcast conversation between Seth and Cecile Richards, the president of Planned Parenthood Federation of America, followed by Cecile's interview from Late Night. But first, you'll hear a closer look. Now let's get to the show.
The Trump White House was on the defensive today after news that then-President Obama warned Trump not to hire his first national security advisor, Michael Flynn. Meanwhile, Republicans were dealing with the fallout from their unpopular health care bill. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Before we get to health care, there was, as usual, another major story developing today with the Trump administration. This time it had to do with Trump's disgraced former national security advisor, Michael Flynn, who had secret contacts with the Russian ambassador and whose irrational behavior caused concern among national security experts on both sides. Today, we found out that Trump had been warned about hiring Flynn by President Obama himself.
It was President Obama who warned then-President-elect Trump on November 10th. You'll remember that 90-minute Oval Office meeting that they had here at the White House 2 days after President Trump was elected. Then-President Obama warned the president-elect not to hire Michael Flynn, to stay away from the retired general.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me that Trump ignored Obama's warnings during that meeting. Just look at Trump's body language right after it finished. He looks like a high schooler who just got dressed down by the principal. Young man, I think you need to start hanging out with a better class of people.
But I think you're fake news. What was that? Nothing.
Now, Obama had some experience with Flynn because Flynn worked for Obama as the head of the Defense Intelligence Agency until Obama fired him in 2014. And yet, despite Obama's warnings, Trump has been trying for weeks to pin this whole thing on Obama, as he did in a recent interview with Fox News.
Just remember, he was approved by the Obama administration at the highest level. And when they say we didn't vet, well, Obama, I guess, didn't vet. If somebody's approved at the absolute highest level by the Obama or a previous administration, I mean, does anybody ever ask about them?
Does anybody ever ask about them? If they did, here's how that conversation would go. Hey, Obama, why didn't you fire Flynn? I did. Why didn't you warn Trump about Flynn? I did. Wait, where are you going? Maui, mother... Best of luck with it all. So, the blame Obama defense doesn't make sense, which may be why Trump administration officials moved on to an even more ridiculous defense. They thought Obama was joking. According to NBC News, a Trump administration official said Obama's remark seemed like it was made in jest. You know, I knew we'd eventually pay the price for having a president that was as funny as Obama because someone dumb would think he was joking about something serious.
Oh, my God, Obama, so funny. Told me Mike Flynn couldn't be trusted. I was dying. Then he said, no, stop laughing. I'm serious, Trump. I fired him for a reason. And I said, stop it. I'm seriously going to pee my pants.
But while Trump was dealing with the Flynn situation, Republicans in Congress were dealing with the fallout of their massively unpopular health care bill. After passing the bill on Thursday, Republicans spent the weekend in their home districts meeting with constituents. And those meetings did not go well.
The fight and the fury mounting over the House health care bill.
Just days after passing a new health care bill in the House, some congressmen are getting a hostile reaction at home.
These are human beings. We have bodies, we have minds.
You're a fraud, you're a phony, and your days are limited.
You are mandating people on Medicaid except dying. You are making a
mandate. No, no one wants anybody to die. You know, that line is so indefensible. Nobody dies because they don't have access to health care.
Nobody dies because they don't have access to health care? That's like saying nobody dies from falling out a window. It's the pavement that gets you. In fact, Republican members of Congress have mostly been at a loss to try to defend this bill in any serious way. As a reporter found when he tried to ask one GOP congressman why he voted for the bill and found that he had nothing.
How do you know this is going to be right, given that there is no CBO analysis to exactly say how many people lose coverage and the impact this would have on the economy?
I know we're doing the right thing.
But how?
I know.
Oh, great. So now our elected representatives are voting for bills the same way gambling addicts pick horses. I got a good feeling about this one. Come on, Gimpy Joe! Part of the reason GOP members of Congress are having so much trouble defending this bill is that many of them openly admit they have not read it. And when they aren't admitting it, they're dodging the question, as a reporter found when he asked members of Congress in the Capitol last week.
Congressman, have you read the bill?
Concerned about voting on this amendment.
Congressman, have you read the health care bill? Morning, Congressman. Have you had time to read the health care bill?
We're still working on it.
Hey, gentlemen, have you read this bill, Congressman? Congressman, have you read the bill?
No, we're in a hurry. We'll be back.
Congressman, have you read the health care bill?
Man, that reporter couldn't have gotten dodged any harder if he had a clipboard and a Greenpeace t-shirt. No, I can't right now. I hate whales. Sorry. Then there was South Carolina Congressman Mark Sanford, who danced around the question of whether he read the entire bill.
Did you read this entire bill?
Yeah. I wouldn't say every... yes, I turned through every page.
I bet you're a lot of fun in book club. I thought this was a real page-turner in that I turned every page. I like how page 77 was between 76 and 78. And when they're not admitting they didn't read the bill, Republicans are openly trashing it, like Congressman Mario Diaz-Balart, who voted for the bill, but said after the vote, this bill is highly imperfect. Imperfect, okay? There's no doubt about that. Is this bill good? No, I don't like it. You voted for it and you're saying that. What were your wedding vows like? Was she my first choice? No, sir, never said she was. Is she highly imperfect? You bet she is. Is she happy to be here? I doubt it, she hates me too. So to recap, many Republicans admit they didn't read the bill. There was no updated Congressional Budget Office analysis before the vote. And a major new amendment that got the bill over the finish line was made public less than 24 hours before the vote. Of course, this rush process is exactly what Republicans claim to hate about the Obamacare process in 2009, including Paul Ryan, as we showed you last week. Back then, Ryan claimed to hate exactly what he's doing now, including to Obama's face.
I don't think we should pass bills that we haven't read, that we don't know what they cost. If you rush this thing through before anybody even knows what it is, that's not good democracy. Speaker Pelosi is trying to jam her bill through as fast as possible. I think this is less about health care policy and more about ideology. This is not bipartisan. We all want to fix this, but we don't think that this is the answer to the solution. And all of the analysis we get proves that point. Now, I'll just simply say this, and I respectfully disagree with the vice president.
Look at Obama's face. True story, that's the exact moment his hair turned gray. Now this is also a true story. After we aired that segment last week, we here at Late Night actually got an email from Speaker Ryan's office taking issue with our analysis of the health care bill and the rush process. And unlike Republicans and their health care bill, we actually read the whole email. But this is great because we genuinely appreciate the engagement and would love to have Speaker Ryan on the show. Suffice to say, we don't agree with the email, and we thought it'd be helpful if we took a second to respond to some of their claims point by point. For example, they took issue with our characterization that the bill was rushed, writing, "This bill has been online for a month, went through four House committees, and the only change this week was a simple three-page amendment," which is misleading for a number of reasons. For one thing, that three-page amendment is the reason a lot of Republicans changed their minds and voted for this bill. So you can't claim it's a small change. A lot can happen in three pages. That's like saying I made you a cappuccino with hot water, sugar, espresso, and one other ingredient. You would say, well, what's the other ingredient, Mr. Cosby? Also, you don't have to take my word for it that the bill was rushed. Just listen to Republican Senator Lindsey Graham, who said, any bill that has been posted less than 24 hours, going to be debated 3 or 4 hours, not scored, needs to be viewed with suspicion. Like y'all, I'm still waiting to see if it's a boy or a girl. But come on, it's a Republican health care bill. It's not a girl. The Speaker's office also took issue with our claim that this bill literally takes from the poor and gives to the rich by cutting taxes on the wealthy, while simultaneously cutting $880 billion from Medicaid. They responded that the bill does not only cut taxes on wealthier Americans. The bill repeals all of Obamacare's taxes. And sure, there are other taxes in Obamacare, like the mandate penalty and a tax on medical device manufacturers. That's true. But Obamacare is funded largely by taxes on wages and investments of people making over $200,000 a year. And under the GOP plan, those people will get a giant tax cut.
Wealthy Americans are set to get a sizable tax break under the GOP's health care bill, and the ultra-wealthy will see an even bigger tax cut. Some of those in the top 1% of incomes will get a tax break of around $33,000.
Wow.
Those in the top 0.1% would get an average tax cut of about $197,000 under the GOP plan.
The 400 wealthiest households in America, because of this tax cut, will see annual tax cuts of $7 million per household.
$7 million. So basically, Donald Trump is giving himself a giant tax cut. Money I assume he will use to buy even longer ties. We also told you last week that Republicans had made the bill even worse by adding a new provision that allows states to waive out of Obamacare's ban on pre-existing conditions. Now, the Speaker's office claims states can only waive the ban on pre-existing conditions if they set up what are known as high-risk pools, which are basically separate insurance plans for older and sicker people. But historically, those high-risk pools have provided worse coverage and much higher costs. And on top of that, some Republicans don't even seem to know how the high-risk pools work in the first place. For example, Texas Congressman Joe Barton claimed that high-risk pools had worked in the state of Maine, and when he was fact-checked on CNN, he had to admit he didn't know what he was talking about.
What Maine did, they didn't put high-risk people into a high-risk pool. They used the high-risk pool to subsidize the premium of high-risk people that were in a regular pool.
Congressman, actually, what the state of Maine did, and I'm fascinated to know if you're willing to do this, is they assessed everyone. I mean, they put a tax on everyone, $4 a month, to pay for that. That was their funding mechanism. Are you willing to support a tax to do that, to put more money in these pools for high-risk individuals, for those with pre-existing conditions?
The plan that we're going to vote on today doesn't have any taxes in it.
I know, but I'm saying to you, you're pointing to Maine as an example. You're saying Maine worked, so this will work, and I'm telling our viewers, Maine worked because of the tax. Are you willing to support a tax to make it work?
I don't know all there is to know about the Maine plan.
Then why did you bring it up? It worked in Maine. Actually, it didn't. So, well, stop asking me about Maine. I don't know what you're talking about. I'm from Texas. The bottom line is this. Republicans rushed this bill through for ideological reasons, despite the fact that every analysis shows it would cut taxes for the wealthy, raise premiums for older, sicker people, and kick millions off insurance. If they really wanted to solve our health care problems, they could start by looking, for example, to other countries like Australia, which has universal single-payer health care that insures everyone for a fraction of the cost. In fact, when he met with the Australian Prime Minister last week, Trump basically seemed to admit, out of nowhere, that their single-payer system was better than our system. The best part, though, is the reaction of Bernie Sanders when he saw the clip for the first time.
It's going to be fantastic health care. Right now, Obamacare is failing. We have a failing health care. I shouldn't say this to our great gentleman and my friend from Australia, because you have better health care than we do.
They do have universal health care. I know. I thought you would.
Wait a minute, Chris. All right, the president has just said it.
I haven't seen Bernie laugh that hard. Bernie hasn't laughed that hard since the public bus he was on drove through a puddle and sprayed a millionaire and a billionaire. This has been a closer look.
Hey, I'm Amber Ruffin.
And I'm Jenny Hagel. Thank you so much for listening to the Late Night with Seth Meyers podcast.
But just one more thing. If you could, please subscribe and rate our podcast.
And review it.
And then call us and tell us you like us in person. Thank you so much.
Hey, everybody. I'm Seth Meyers. I'm here with Cecile Richards, who's going to be a guest tonight. Thank you so much.
Absolutely.
First time on Late Night. I'm very excited to have you.
Thank you.
And you were telling me your children are older. I have a one-year-old.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so you have, you do not have the anxieties I have anymore.
Different anxieties, but yeah.
Because I feel the one thing I have less anxiety than I thought because I can, I watch him on a nanny cam. I like to know where he is. So I want to start with this. You took on this job about a decade ago.
Mm-hmm, I did.
Is this where, how does this all measure up to where you thought it would be right now?
I don't think any of us in this country thought this is where we would be right now. So, but I'm incredibly honored to be at Planned Parenthood because I feel like we are like sort of in the forefront of fighting back on just a whole host of things, including access to healthcare in this country. So I sort of feel like if I wasn't at Planned Parenthood now, I would be desperately trying to figure out how to get there.
I when you're on the show tonight, I want to talk about sort of the positives of the movement. But mm-hmm. obviously, it seems as though your organization has been under siege. It's constantly in the news for being under siege. Is this a lot worse than you saw it? Is each year sort of, are you more surprised at how people keep coming for it?
Not really. I mean, we actually just celebrated our 100th anniversary, and our whole history has been about sort of trying to push forward on women's rights and women's healthcare access. So that's not really new. And I would say we actually had 8 really incredible years with President Obama where we just made such enormous progress. But I guess we'll talk about that later tonight. So I think even in the midst of the political back and forth that happens primarily in Congress, we were able to make huge strides in women's health. And that's what you just kind of have to keep your eye on the ball. Otherwise, yeah, you would probably it would be kind of frustrating.
I think people might be surprised that a Texan like yourself is sort of the face of Planned Parenthood. We think it does seem like an organization.
It's an East Coasty
kind
of thing.
Yeah, it feels a little coastal. But your background, it makes a lot of sense. So your mother, Ann Richards, was the governor of Texas, and you were sort of raised in a red state. As a very progressive parents. What was that like?
Yeah, we were very social justice-y folks, and I mean, my parents were involved in every movement that was known to mankind. And there was a brief hot second there when mom was governor of Texas. But Texas is really a more populist state, or it was at the time. I do think that I think the country's become more hyper-partisan. I think Texas has sort of gone, made a shift to the right. But I had a wonderful childhood. We got to be, we marched against the Vietnam War. My first time to the principal's office was for wearing a black armband. And it was just I think growing up in an era and with a family that believed that you were on this earth to make a difference. And I've been incredibly fortunate to always have a job that I think pushed the envelope on making things better.
And how many siblings do you have?
There's 4 of us all together. I have 3, and they're all in Austin. Everybody stayed in Austin but me.
And did your parents give you a choice? Like, you can join us in our social justice worrying? Or did you sort of, did you come to it on your own? Did you all decide, oh, this is, we like this message. We want to be part of this.
I mean, everyone kind of chose their own path. But it's funny. I think of my mom as being, there she was. She was elected governor of Texas. So obviously she appealed to folks across a lot of different spectrums. But I will say, as she got older and before she died, she just became, I think, much more adamant about women's rights and how important they were. I think because she saw her granddaughters growing up in a country, and I mean, God forbid she would see what's happening today, a country where in many cases we were backsliding on women's access.
The Texas Freedom Network, mm-hmm. that's an organization. Did you start that organization?
I did start that organization.
Can you tell us a little bit about that?
So my first volunteer is my daughter, and my first donor is my grandmother, and that was pretty much how we started. And it's now, and it's, I don't know, I mean, 15 or 20 years old, and it's actually really doing incredible work to organize religious leaders, clergy, folks that are supporting public education, a lot of other things, and they do tremendous work in Texas trying to keep the textbooks factually accurate and just some sort of basic good governance stuff.
Talking about abortion, I feel, is very tricky in this country. And I think because people really seem to feel one way or the other about it, the nuance is not often discussed, which is that, is it safe to say that you have a great amount of respect for people who would choose not to have an abortion?
Absolutely. And in fact, it's interesting because I do think one of the mistakes that's been made over the decades is like they use, I think movements use these sort of this political binary that people are either pro-life or pro-choice. And actually, of course, the vast majority of people don't want to be labeled at all when it comes to this issue. And, you know, we've done a lot of work and really talked to people all across the country. And you're right. Abortion is a topic that people feel is very personal. And they also believe that the government shouldn't be making personal decisions about pregnancy for women. And we found that even in the reddest of the red states, in states like Mississippi and South Dakota, where overwhelmingly the voters have rejected efforts to make abortion illegal. So I think that's really, it's not a question of putting your own point of view on other people. It's really respecting women and doctors to be able to make the best medical decisions. And then I think, of course, doubling down on the work that we do every day, which is help women get access to affordable birth control and prevent unintended pregnancy.
It, you know, because I feel it sometimes gets lost that the pro-choice also includes pro-life in a way, because choices, some would choose this and some would choose the other, and that gets lost in it, that one is a little bit more inclusive.
Right.
Is it surprising you? Does it feel like hypocrisy that the Republican Party, which talks about the value of choice and things like their new healthcare bill or schools, choice seems so important to them, and yet here they don't seem to have any interest in it at all?
I think it's really upsetting and distressing, and it's distressing for women who are Republicans as well. And it's also interesting to me that this is the party of like small government, unless it's about women's, you know, reproductive organs, and then it's like that. You know, they want to be all up in there. And I think that's where we're seeing this unbelievable outpouring of concern of women across, again, party lines, geographic lines. You know, women's ability to make their own decisions about their pregnancy has been well established for many, many decades. And to think now that we would be going backwards in this arena is unthinkable.
You talked about 8 years with President Obama and the steps that were taken. Correct me if I'm wrong, but on the federal level, progress was made, but it seems as the erosion of women's choices seems to be happening at the state level more often, and that really takes away choices. No matter what the federal government is saying, it seems like if a woman wants to have an abortion, there are just fewer and fewer places for them to even entertain that idea.
Well, not only a safe and legal abortion, but even access to birth control or access to STI testing and treatment, all the kinds of services that we provide. I do think that has been largely a part of what happened in the 2010 elections and sort of the redistricting that took place that made state legislatures wildly out of step with where the populace was. It's interesting because my home state of Texas, which I know you kind of poked fun at a minute ago, which is totally legitimate.
Yeah. You know, we probably will again, too.
No, exactly. That's all right. It's fair game. But, you know, that's a state where Planned Parenthood is actually a vital healthcare provider, which, again, might surprise some folks, in all kinds of areas of the state. Because for women in Texas, it represents basically affordable health care. And, you know, what's really distressing to people in my home state is that actually the state has shut down family planning centers. They have blocked Planned Parenthood for providing breast cancer screenings. These are basic health care issues. And that's what I think the danger is now. We've gotten both at the state and the federal level, folks who are putting politics ahead of women's health care and well-being. And that, to me, is something that is against what American values are.
You always hear this statistic that only 3% of what Planned Parenthood does is abortion services. Mm-hmm. And you do all this other stuff as well. Do you ever worry that by saying, hey, it's only 3%, that you're sort of, that sort of stigmatizes the 3%? Like, there's nothing wrong with it being 3%. Like, I guess I sometimes worry that it's almost, when you say 3%, it's if we keep working, we can get it down to 1%. That's not really the goal.
Right. No, exactly. And I think you make a really good point. And we really work hard to make sure that we are not stigmatizing the decisions that women make. And also making sure that people know the wide breadth of things that we do. I mean, there's just so much misinformation out there, some of which is perpetrated by people in office who know better. So we do believe it's important that women be able to access safe and legal abortion no matter what state they live in, no matter what their zip code, their geography, their income status. Unfortunately, that's not true in America. And it's also really frustrating that, again, the party that's supposedly the pro-family party is making it harder to get birth control, you know, harder to have a healthy pregnancy, and then harder at this point to actually raise your children once you have them. And I think we have to call that out.
the rate of unintended pregnancy has gone down, and that's something that you are proud of at Planned Parenthood.
Correct.
And it seems sometimes I feel as though the framing is that that's not a thing that would strike me as unintended pregnancy is a completely nonpartisan success.
You'd think so. And in fact, I mean, that's what's crazy about looking at this Congress that is now trying to. Because one thing it's important to understand is when they talk about defunding Planned Parenthood, we're not in the federal budget, so they're not taking us out of the budget. What they're actually saying is that women and other folks who come to us for health care, for preventive health care, not for abortion, but for family planning, can no longer go to Planned Parenthood. And that to me is if you looked at the record now, historic low in teenage pregnancy, 30-year low for unintended pregnancy, we should actually be encouraging more women to have options to go and get access to affordable birth control. And by ending the access to Planned Parenthood, that's 2.5 million people who may not have their health care provider next year.
I want to ask, you're in New York, and you now sort of have, again, this is the bubble. Welcome to our bubble.
Love it here.
Called the bubble often. Mm-hmm. And are you recognized? Are people happy to see you here in our fine city?
Actually, not only in this fine city, but all across the country. I think there's sort of like this mythology. Maybe people come up to me and say like, oh my God, how are you doing? The truth is every single day, and it's definitely happened in the subway today, folks stop me and say, I think don't you work at Planned Parenthood? I just want to say they were there for me when I didn't have insurance, or they helped my sister when she needed birth control, fill in the blank. And that's not just true in New York. I actually just got back from Michigan. Same thing happened. So that's what people forget is that Planned Parenthood, we're in all 50 states. 1 in 5 women in this country have been to us for health care at some point in their lifetime. And almost every one of them can tell you when it was. And that, again, is what I'm seeing that's encouraging is I feel like it's the great alumni association of Planned Parenthood that is now out in force. And they're not only marching, but they're at town hall meetings. They're phoning Congress. They're telling their stories online. And that's what gives me hope.
Does that hope wane a little when you see that the Senate puts together a group to talk about this House health care bill and it's 12 men?
Extraordinary.
Because even, you know, again, all you would need is 5 women, and statistically one of them would have had a story to tell about Planned Parenthood.
Correct.
But of course, the one way you know they won't is if you don't have a single woman on the panel.
Well, I'm really grateful that not only you raise that, but you continue to point out sort of this because, I mean, I remember I was on Capitol Hill when they were first trying to pass this horrible bill, Trump Care or whatever they're calling American Health Care Act. And I'd heard that the Freedom Caucus was over at the White House to negotiate the final details of the bill before they jammed it through the House. And I thought, oh, my God, I wish I could get a photograph of that because it's probably a bunch of white men, you know, at the White House. And then, of course, Vice President Mike Pence did me the favor of tweeting that photo out right there and bigger than Dallas. And it was exactly. And what we found out is, of course, that was a group that negotiated away maternity benefits for women. This is not lost on women or men who think it's just outrageous that folks in Congress are taking away people's access to health care, and particularly folks who have the least access to health care, which is in many cases women.
Can you talk for a moment about how abortion is, it's a societal issue, but it's also an economic issue, which I think often gets lost in this, and how it's an economic issue that affects women?
Well, it's not only abortion, but absolutely abortion and birth control. These are some of the most fundamental economic issues for women about when and whether to have children. I mean, you have a child yourself, you know, now you know they don't raise themselves.
Right.
They actually have all kinds of needs. And women are very mindful of the responsibility, which is, frankly, a responsibility that doesn't seem to be appreciated by Congress, that it's not simply having a baby. It's then you're responsible for that child for all the rest of your life. And, you know, we look at Planned Parenthood since we just turned 100. We look at, like, the difference that it's made for women to have reproductive access in this country. It's, you know, the primary reason that we're now half the workforce, that we are in every single line of work. In fact, I think I just read that for the first time, the NASA class is half women, so even astronauts. And that is all based on women being able to make decisions about when and whether to have children and be able to support them, support the family that they want.
You guys work domestically, but you also have a lot of global initiatives.
Correct.
And what sort of organizations do you work with when you go overseas or out of the country, I should say?
Yeah, no, we fund a number of programs in Africa and in Latin America, and they are basically primarily programs that are working on women's health, maternal health. We do a lot of HIV/AIDS programs as well. I mean, the same issues that women are facing in Nigeria, in Kenya, are the same issues, unfortunately, some women are now facing in this in America as well, and that is basic access to affordable, high quality care. And we do. It's interesting. We our doctors and clinicians in this country often travel overseas and vice versa. So, I think around the world, people are recognizing that the ability of a country to succeed is fundamentally linked to women's access to rights and access to healthcare and family planning.
I know you sat down with Ivanka Trump and tried to explain exactly some of the misconceptions or clear up some of the misconceptions. Did you feel positive after that? Did you feel like there was a sense of understanding as to what you do and maybe that there's a voice inside the White House, or based on everything that's happened since that meeting, which was fairly early on? Do you feel like it was maybe all for naught?
Well, I mean, nothing is all for naught. I'll meet with anybody, anybody.
You're doing this
anytime.
Podcast. That's a
real... there we go. Yeah. To talk about the incredible work that Planned Parenthood does, because I do think there's a lot of folks that are in office and or that are just going into office, like Ivanka Trump, who may not know. And so I was glad to have that opportunity. Obviously, now she has a very big job. I mean, her portfolio, as I understand it, is now everything about women's issues, including mm-hmm. women's access to health care, their economic opportunities. So I certainly hope that she is bringing some new light and new perspective into the White House, because these first 100 days have been really, really rough for women and very discouraging.
And we'll talk about this in the show tonight. Is the encouraging part this idea of people getting out, seeing people protesting, marching in a positive way? Have you at least been – do you feel emboldened by that?
I feel – look, change is going to happen, Seth, in this country – not in Washington. It's going to happen in the states. And that's where I see all the activity. I mean, as you probably know, and I'm sure you saw some of the town hall meetings so far, there's not a town hall meeting in America that there aren't women in pink hats carrying Planned Parenthood signs. And also just really, I think, giving voice to the real lived experience of women in this country. I think in Washington, I've sat before Congress for 5 hours testifying mm-hmm. at one point to try to explain to them how birth control works. There's a lot of sort of just lack of empathy and understanding. I hope that this movement is shedding a light for some of these guys on just what women need to be successful and to participate in the workforce and to be part of our economy. And that means basically access to affordable health care. This bill they passed, as you know, last week in the House of Representatives would be devastating for women, not only because 24 million folks would lose their health care insurance, but millions of folks would be blocked from going to Planned Parenthood.
Well, thank you so much for joining us here.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
I'm looking forward to you. I wanted to take this extra time because I feel like we will not have the luxury of this much time. And I'm just so fascinated by the work you do. And thank you so much for doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me.
I'll see you in a little bit.
Okay, see you tonight.
Our guest has been the president of Planned Parenthood Federation of Americans since 2006. Please welcome to the show, Cecile Richards, everybody. Show.
It's great to be here.
I'm very honored that you're here. I want to congratulate you on a birthday. Planned Parenthood just turned 100 years old.
Exactly.
In October. That's incredible.
Good.
And 100 seems to be a number we're hearing a lot. We just cut through 100 days of the Trump administration, 100 days of what many are calling the resistance. How do you feel being, safe to say, more team resistance than the other? How do you feel it's going?
So I think we've done more in 100 years than they've done in 100 days, I'll say that. But it feels great. We started out with one little clinic in Brooklyn, New York, and now we have hundreds of health centers. One in five women in this country have been to Planned Parenthood. And frankly, because of some of the, I think, attacks on us, we've actually never been more popular in the United States of America.
You were at... I think there's a lot to be said. You were at the Women's March the day after the inauguration.
Yes.
How do you feel as though the energy you're seeing here, it obviously must feel very positive to you. Mm-hmm. Do you feel as though it can be harnessed for actual change?
Absolutely. And it was amazing to be in Washington, I think. But the thing that was amazing to me was not only that Washington, there were, you know, thousands and thousands of people, but there were 10,000 people in Salt Lake City, Utah, and there were people marching in Fairbanks, Alaska in a snowstorm. There were folks in Antarctica marching. They were in every single continent. To me, that shows that this is a resistance movement that is broad and deep. It's everywhere. And women are leading it. And that is really exciting. I think about, you know, the 1 in 5 women in this country that have been to Planned Parenthood. I feel like they are on the front lines now protecting women's health and rights.
So you talk about 1 in 5 women, and obviously those women would have a story to tell about their experiences with Planned Parenthood. Mm-hmm. Right now, this bill went from the House to the Senate. There are 13 senators who are crafting their version of it. They are all male.
I noticed that.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're paid to. You're very...
Yeah.
How do you feel... How egregious is it to not have women also sort of talking about the how this bill is affecting women's health?
Well, I mean, I definitely feel like if more members of Congress and the Senate could get pregnant, we wouldn't be fighting about Planned Parenthood and about birth control anymore. So that would help. And I think because this particular bill is so harmful to women, there's an extra special duty to make sure that women are represented in these conversations and in the final, you know, in the final bill.
You were saying you saw Mike Pence was having a meeting with all men talking about, talking about health care. And you were saying that you wished you could have gone and taken a photo of it just to show people how insane it looks to just have men talking about it.
Right.
But then he tweeted it.
I thought that was really good. Yeah. Yes, actually.
So this is...
You have it right there.
Yeah, he thought this was a good look for talking about health care. That is... And then a very funny guy named Justin Shaines tweeted this photo and said it was like dogs talking about cats' health care. Do you think that's accurate?
I think he's got a point. I actually think maybe I would rather have golden retrievers determining the next health care bill than the folks who are
right,
in Congress.
Yeah.
Actually, not a bad look. But the thing that's important about that photograph, I'm glad you showed that, is because that was actually the Freedom Caucus that went to the White House to determine all the final details of this bill. And the main thing that they negotiated was to get rid of maternity benefits for women in America. That's how dangerous it is. And so what's frustrating, because this bill also, of course, ends access to birth control at Planned Parenthood for millions of patients. So I feel like this Congress is trying to make it harder for women to prevent an unintended pregnancy and a lot harder to have a healthy pregnancy.
Well, this is, you know, obviously, you know, Planned Parenthood and abortion are not separated in our discourse in any way, shape, or form. You know, it's a very emotional issue, and people have sort of married the two. But I think it's important to say that this healthcare bill, for the people who are choosing to have children, for the women who are making the choice to go through their pregnancy, this does them no favors at all. Is that safe
Actually,
to say?
No. In fact, it's much worse because, of course, this bill that supposedly defunds Planned Parenthood, but we're not in the federal budget, it basically just blocks folks from coming to Planned Parenthood, has nothing to do with abortion because federal funds do not pay for abortion. So what it's actually doing is saying to women, you can't go to Planned Parenthood anymore for cancer screenings, for birth control. I was actually just in Speaker Ryan's own district. We have 3 health centers there. These women are saying, how in the world am I going to be able to get my annual exam if I can't go to Planned Parenthood anymore?
And you mentioned that there are 3 in his district. There are so many places, it seems now, in this country where there are no places for women to go, and it doesn't seem like this is of great concern to the federal government.
I hope that they really think about this, and that's why I'm so proud of the women all across the country who are not only marching, but they are calling Congress, and they are going to town hall meetings and telling their stories, because, again, this bill would do so many things to cut off coverage for women. And I know in my home state of Texas, when they tried this same kind of thing, we've actually seen now not only dozens of women's health centers shut down, but a doubling of the maternal mortality rate in the 21st century. It's really unbelievable, and it's unconscionable.
So moving forward, what would you say to the people that have sort of been emboldened by this, this protest movement, this voicing the way they feel about what's happening now? What are the steps for them to take? Is it to continue to protest? Is it to donate? What would you ask of them?
I would say definitely, you know, marching is good. Going to town hall meetings is good. Calling Congress is incredibly good. Women have shut down the congressional switchboard I don't know how many times. And then also, I'm supposed to say, you can text DEFEND to 22422. I was afraid I couldn't remember the number. Yeah, yeah. But and if you do that, then actually we'll connect you at Planned Parenthood and tell you everything that's going on every day. And it's, look, that's what's going to change the direction of this country, and that's what's going to influence Congress and this White House, is people taking action.
Well, you know, I do think the one thing that always surprises me, because I understand, again, that abortion is this very emotional issue, and I understand and I respect that certain people have a different opinion of it than me, but it seems like women's health at its core is something that both sides of the aisle should agree on. And thank you so much for fighting that fight for them.
Absolutely.
Really,
it's an honor.
It.
Yeah, thank you.
Cecile Richards, everybody.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
This episode is brought to you by the effortlessly scrumptious bite of Skinny Pop Popcorn. Imagine this: perfectly popped, endlessly delicious kernels, a symphony of just three simple ingredients: popcorn, sunflower oil, and a sprinkle of salt. No compromise, just pure snacking freedom. And hey, if you're up for a twist, dive into flavors like zesty white cheddar to sweet and salty kettle. Every bite's a delight, light and oh so tasty. Shop Skinny Pop now.